Welcome to Tech Nation Health, reimagining the future of health and healthcare with the emergence of new technologies and breakthrough science. Today on Tech Nation Health, brain cancer in children. Dr. Rob Wexler-Rea is a professor and the director of the Tumor Initiation and Maintenance Program at Sanford Burnham Prebys Medical Discovery Institute.
In the last few years, brain tumors have become the most prevalent cause of cancer-related death in kids. And that's in part because we've gotten better at treating leukemias. And these are devastating diseases, as you can imagine. A parent whose child is diagnosed with this is suddenly put into a tailspin, trying to figure out what are the best treatments, how do we manage this, you know, what are the right ways to approach treating this disease. And typically, a child who's diagnosed with a brain tumor undergoes surgery right away to take out the tumor, followed by craniospinal radiation. That means radiation from the top of the head to the base of the spine. And the reason for that is because if you just irradiate the tumor in the brain, the tumor cells often spread down the spinal cord. And so you have to irradiate the entire nervous system in order to really get rid of the tumor. And then once they're done with their radiotherapy, they will get chemotherapy. And it's usually a cocktail of three or four really potent chemotherapy agents that are supposed to mop up any remaining cancer cells. Now, depending on the disease, in some cases, this will cure the kid or at least prolong their survival by several years. In other cases, even with those aggressive therapies, the patient will die of the disease. And so there are certain kinds of brain tumors that are nearly 100% lethal and others that are amenable to therapy and for which the therapies are clearly doing something. But in many cases, just prolonging survival, and then the tumor will come back even more aggressive and kill the child.
There must be severe side effects.
There are. And so the challenge with pediatric brain tumors is, of course, first and foremost, to cure the child. But those children who do survive the therapy end up often with very severe long-term side effects. They have cognitive deficits. You've irradiated their developing brain, and you've damaged the stem cells that are going to give rise to the nervous system that are going to make the connections with each other. And so often kids with who have survived brain tumor therapy will end up with 10 to 20 point drops in IQ over the next 10 years. Now, the way IQ is defined, 100 is average, 75 is mentally retarded. So these kids can go from being an average normal kid to really not being able to cope with the world efficiently or effectively. And so a lot of kids who survive brain tumor therapy are not able to go to college, not able to hold down a job, not able to leave their parents' house. And those are the cognitive deficits. There are also endocrine disorders and severe and increased susceptibility to other cancers later in life. And so a child will be cured of one tumor, but then they'll develop another tumor because you've irradiated their cells and caused mutations that then turn those cells into another cancer.
Does it matter where in the brain the tumor is?
It matters in a number of ways. So there are several different kinds of brain tumors that kids develop. One of the most severe is called brainstem glioma or diffuse intrinsic pontine glioma. And this is one of those tumors where survival is nearly zero. And there are a couple of reasons for that. One, it's a very aggressive tumor. But two, because it occurs in the brainstem, it's usually impossible to surgically remove it. And if you cannot surgically remove the tumor, then the radiation and the chemotherapy are usually not sufficient. So one of the consequences of location is how susceptible it is to surgery. Tumors that occur elsewhere in the brain can be surgically removed, and that gives kids much better odds at long-term survival.
But of course, we only can remove what we can remove. There's other cancers cancer cells in and around.
That's right. And so the cancer cells go from the original site where they developed and spread forward into the front part of the brain, and they spread backward down the spinal cord. And so even if we're able to surgically remove the bulk of the tumor, we still have a lot of work to do to kill the remaining tumor cells.
Now, what are you working on?
So my lab focuses on a brain tumor called medulloblastoma. and this is the most common malignant brain tumor in kids. It's an extremely aggressive tumor that if it's untreated, will invariably spread throughout the nervous system and kill the child. Now, the good thing is nowadays in modern centers, we don't leave kids untreated. In fact, we treat them very aggressively. And so with that combination of surgery and radiation and chemotherapy, a child with medulloblastoma has about a 75% chance of surviving for 5 years or more. Now, the five-year survival is a benchmark that adult oncologists use because typically in an adult, if you get a patient to survive for 5 years, that means the cancer is probably gone. In a kid, that's not the case. And saying that we've prolonged survival by 5 years, certainly better than nothing, but often kids with medulloblastoma will relapse between 5 and 10 years or even 12 or 15 years after the original tumor. And so one problem
is... Kids are growing.
They're growing, and we're not able to track all of the tumor cells that may have become indolent and then take off again when we stop treating them. And so we need to get better at treating those kids, and we need to get better at treating them in a way that's going to cure their tumor without causing long-term devastating side effects. And so in my lab, we work on animal models of medulloblastoma, and we develop a couple of different kinds of models, what are called genetically engineered mouse models, where we take some of the genes that we know are altered in the human tumors, and we alter them in the mouse, and that gives rise to a mouse brain tumor that we can then study. We can study how that tumor originates. We can study the steps in tumor development, and we can use that model to then test therapies. The second kind of model that's extremely powerful is what's called a patient-derived xenograft. And this is something that we've been able to do because we have a close collaboration with the clinicians at the Children's Hospital. So when a child undergoes surgery, we usually get an email or a text and they say, we're going to do a surgery now. And I'll send somebody from my lab down to collect a little bit of that tumor tissue, bring it back to the lab, and inject it into the brain of a mouse. And then we'll passage that tumor in the mouse. So it's essentially like a little avatar, a little piece of the patient's tumor that we're able to expand and study in the lab. And so we've generated more than 20 of these over the last few years. And the amazing thing is these really recapitulate the key features of the patient's tumors and the diversity of these tumors. And so even though medulloblastoma is referred to with this one label, it's really many different diseases caused by many different kinds of mutations. And to have the opportunity to study that diversity in the lab is really amazing. And so we use these models to study what are the genes that are important, what are the drugs that we might use to target those genes, and then we use them as platforms to test therapy. So we'll take a drug that we think might work, and we'll test it on a bunch of our animal models and see whether we're able to cure the disease. The idea is that if we do preclinical studies like this, if we test therapies in our models before we go into a clinical trial, the odds of success of that clinical trial are much greater. Right now, and this is not just in pediatrics, about 5% of clinical trials for cancer drugs end up resulting in approved drugs. That means 95% of clinical trials fail. And there are many reasons for that. But one big reason is because a lot of the trials are not backed up by strong data from the lab in which you say, this kind of tumor is going to respond to this kind of therapy. And so that's our goal, is really to try to identify the appropriate therapies for the different kinds of childhood brain tumors and even the different kinds of medulloblastoma.
So the unfortunate situation of a child having a brain tumor, you're actually able to take, in a sense, their precise tumor and make it a case that you can continue to work with and perpetuate. That's very unusual.
It is, but it's extremely powerful. And we've worked really hard to set up the system. And as I said, we generated more than 20 of these, and we've shared them with about 30 or 40 labs around the world because not every lab can do this. Not every lab has access to it. And so we're able to share these models with other labs so that collectively we can all study this disease and come up with better approaches to therapy.
This is a completely hypothetical question, but I'm so struck by the consequences of the radiation.
Mm-hmm.
That is just so severe.
Mm-hmm.
Do some parents and kids choose not to have the radiation portion?
Well, typically not, although there are cases where radiation is not recommended. So in young children, they tend to try to avoid it. If a child is under 3 years old, they'll usually try to give them other therapies until they get to an older age, because it's been observed that if you irradiate a really young child, this cognitive decline is much more severe. So there is certainly a goal in the field to try to reduce radiation, but nobody wants to take the chance that we're going to not be able to cure the tumor. I should also say that the side effects of the chemotherapy are really devastating as well. And I met a mom recently who actually we corresponded by email starting last July. And this is a woman whose child was diagnosed with medulloblastoma and received initial therapy and responded to it and then relapsed. And she wrote to me, she'd read about my work, and she wrote to me and asked, you know, is there anything new on the horizon? Can you explain to me what my child has? And we struck up an email conversation. And her child was receiving therapy for the relapsed tumor, very, very potent chemotherapy drugs. In fact, potent enough that the way they do this is they take some of the child's bone marrow before they give the chemotherapy, because they give such intensive chemotherapy that it basically wipes out the child's blood-forming cell system. And so they give that intense chemotherapy, and then they give them back their bone marrow as a way of rescuing them. Anyway, her child went through this intensive therapy and seemed to be responding. But somewhere around Christmas, so this is 6 months after he started the therapy for the relapsed tumor, he started to have just very, very severe side effects from the therapy and ended up dying from those. She wrote to me, I got an email with the subject line, terrible news. And he had basically, even though the therapy was eliminating the tumor, it was destroying her child. And he died of the disease. And she still, I had the opportunity to meet her in New York last week. And she's still devastated because, I mean, she's lost a child, and seemingly because of what they were doing to try to cure him.
The treatment.
Yeah. So it was sort of a cautionary tale to me that, you know, we, of course, we need to be as aggressive as possible. But at the same time, we need to be cognizant that these are human beings and they're fragile.
It takes a long time to get all the pieces together, to understand, to make it happen. And yet I sense your urgency.
Yeah, this is something that, you know, I went into science because I thought it was really cool. Solving puzzles, figuring out how things work, that was really cool. And I happened to land in a lab. Actually, I went to do my postdoc at Stanford in a lab that was going to leave. And so I had to switch to another lab. And I landed in a lab where they were studying development in flies, fruit flies, and had come upon a gene that was important in fruit fly development that had a homolog in mice and in people. And so they decided to make a knockout mouse, a mouse that had a mutation in this gene. And that mouse developed a brain tumor. And so suddenly they became interested in this gene and in the causes of brain tumors. And that's around the time I came to the lab. And so initially, again, this was just one more really cool puzzle that I got to solve. Why was a mutation in this gene that seemed to have nothing to do with cancer causing cancer? What happened was, of course, you know, the puzzle was fun. The pursuit of this was really fun. But I got to meet at one point a physician who treats these kids and a child with medulloblastoma. It was a session that my advisor could not attend, and he asked me to go and participate. And it was an evening session for medical students where the physician would give a talk about a disease. They would bring in a patient with that disease, and then they'd bring a researcher who works on that disease. And so I got to sit in on the session, hear him interview the patient and the patient's mom, and give my talk. And then after that point in the session, the mom and the child left, and the oncologist turned to the crowd of medical students and said, you know, I hope you enjoyed that. How many of you think that this child is cured? And he put up a picture of the child's MRI before the therapy. And you could see this sort of big blob of a tumor. And then after the therapy, and it was all gone. And everybody said, you know, that looks amazing. And it turns out he had a type of medulloblastoma that they knew was going to come back. They knew that this was going to spread down the spinal cord and there would be no way to treat it. And so suddenly this kind of really fun, interesting puzzle became something that was going to affect the lives of kids. And over the years, I've gotten to meet a lot of kids and their parents who are fighting this disease. And it just transforms how you think about going to work in the morning, you know, getting a grant rejected, getting a paper rejected. You think, you know, sure, that happens, but we have to keep at it. We have to really keep fighting because we have to look these people in the face and say, we are doing everything we can to make this better.
And you mean we, you and your brother is also, he is also a pediatric cancer researcher.
He is. So so I'm the middle of three kids. My older and younger brothers are both doctors. I'm a PhD. So I'm the black sheep. And my older brother is a pediatric oncologist. So he treats kids with cancer. And his focus is on leukemia. And he does research in the lab that focuses on leukemia as well. And I was trying to think back to when we realized that we were both doing the same kind of thing. And it just sort of happened that way. It wasn't by design and it wasn't based on discussion. But we're both really passionate about this and come at it actually from very different perspectives because, as you can imagine, a doctor who treats kids sees every day the devastation and, you know, the imperfections in our therapy. So he tends to be a lot more skeptical and I tend to be a lot more hopeful. And when I talk about the therapies that we're developing in the lab, he at some point will roll his eyes and say, do you know how many of those therapies actually work? And we were all together with my parents and my other brother last year, and we got into this huge argument about the likelihood that what we do in the lab is going to make a difference in the clinic. But I strongly believe that it will, and I strongly believe that by studying this disease, by figuring out what causes it, by testing therapies, that we're going to make strides in the clinic. And I think in his heart he believes it too, otherwise he wouldn't be doing this.
Dr. Rob Wexler-Rea is a professor and the director of the Tumor Initiation and Maintenance Program at Sanford Burnham Prebys Medical Discovery Institute. More information is available at sbpdiscovery.org. For TechNation Health, I'm Moira Gunn.
TechNation and its regular segment BioTechNation are produced at the studios of KQED-FM in San Francisco. Executive producer is Matt Gardner. The director of technical production is Monte Carlos. And audio engineers include Howard Gelman, Seal Muller, and Larry Upton. Our theme music was composed by Ann Nachtrieb-Zesiger and Robert Powell, with title creation provided by NameLab Incorporated of San Francisco. Program information and internet audio is available on the web at technation.com. TechNation and BioTechNation are productions of TechNation Media. I'm Paul Landcourt.